Welcome, everybody, to Health, Wealth, and Divine. My name is Jawanza. Great to be here with you. I hope you're glad to be here with me because I've got a wonderful show lined up for you. For all of you entrepreneurs out there, for all of you budding entrepreneurs out there, this show is the show that you really, really need to start following, okay? We do a show on entrepreneurship once a month, and if you are in business or you've thought about going into business, there are very important principles that you need to be aware of that can help you to succeed. And if followed, I'm going to tell you how you can get this awesome book. And if you follow the principles in this book, you are really going to increase the odds of you succeeding in business. You want to stack the deck in your favor. And there's a book that's written by my guest today. It's called Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top. I believe it's 105 business principles now and growing by Professor Joseph Geiger. And he's got over 50 years experience as an entrepreneur. And anybody that's been doing something successfully for that long, you definitely want to listen to him. So let me tell you a little bit about him. If you're just tuning in for the very first time, again, Professor Geiger is a regular on the show. He comes on once a month. He's written a fabulous book. And matter of fact, he's written two fabulous books. The other one is Finding a Career for Life. We'll tell you about that during the course of the show as well. But currently retired, Joseph Geiger grew up on a Kansas farm and graduated from the School of Business at the University of Denver. Over his lifetime, he has started over 10 businesses, two of which predated his college graduation. So while he was still in school studying, he had already started two businesses before he even got his degree. And after his second retirement, he taught entrepreneurship and small business management at J. Sargent Reynolds Community College, located in Richmond, Virginia, where he currently resides. So, again, to all of you budding entrepreneurs or entrepreneurs, if you know of somebody that you know has an interest in entrepreneurship, just get on the phone and call them right now. If you can't get on the phone and call them because you're listening by phone, well, during the course of the show, if you have a question, comment, all you have to do is just press 1, and then I can bring you on and you can ask your question or make your comment. Well, to my guest, Professor, great to have you back as always. I'm looking for a very, very powerful show. Thank you so much for being my guest again today.
Thank you very much for having me.
My pleasure. Again, Professor, I am just very, very excited to talk to you about entrepreneurship. I'm holding your book in my hand. I was reading it again today, and there's so many powerful nuggets, tips, hints in this book that people, if they follow this information, they can save themselves a lot of headache, a lot of heartache, and can actually increase the odds of their success. I mean, these principles are born out of over 50 years of experience. And I mean, when you have a roadmap, a compass, somebody that's done it and can assist you, show you where the mines are, that's a great big help. And so, you know, again, I'm just grateful to have you on as my guest today. We're going to be talking about finding business opportunities. We'll start the discussion there. Finding business opportunities. I'm sure that over, again, with your 50 years of experience, you've learned a lot about finding business opportunities after having started over 10 businesses yourself. What's the secret to finding business opportunities, Professor? I mean, again, a lot of times people, as reading in your book today, a lot of people think that it's where do you look to find them, but you say that it's not just where to look, but you got to know how to look, right?
Right, pretty much. First, before we really get into that, we probably ought to define what is a business opportunity. I mean, after all, it's pretty hard to define something if you don't know what you're looking for. So here's a couple of real short definitions. A business opportunity is an idea that describes something that people want or need and are willing to buy sufficiently often at a price that makes a business financially viable. That's one from a book called Entrepreneurship from Moriarty and Glickman. And the one I'd come up with is shorter still, a business opportunity profitably exchanges a product or service for money. And so that's kind of what you're looking for. It needs to be something that solves customers' problems, that answers their wants or needs, and particularly wants. And that's what you're looking for. And just because something, you're looking at something, you think you found something that has already been solved, a problem that's already been solved, well, it can be solved a different way. A couple of really great examples are up until about 1880, if people had light, it was from the fire. In other words, gas light or fire, you know, a fire pit, that was a form of light. And then Edison came along and invented the incandescent light bulb. Got a patent in December of 1880, and probably today more light is supplied by the incandescent light bulb than anything else. Now we in the developed world we're slowly moving away from that, but still the incandescent light bulb is the winner. There's some other really simple things that a man started making clothing. I'm told about 170,000 years ago, and we took animal skins to start with and draped them over ourselves and then made belts and made ties and buttons and all kinds of things, snaps and zippers. One would think there is no possible other way to do it until Velcro was invented. And that happened in about 1945 or 50. And I'm sure there will be additional ways in the future. So what you need to find is something that people that solves a need, and just because the need has already been solved, such as buttons and zippers, doesn't mean that Velcro won't work and won't sell, and it certainly has. So with that behind us, then how do you find an opportunity? And there is really three ways, I think, that that opportunities are found. The one that was used by Edison is he found the need, and people wanted light, and invented the light bulb. And sometimes it's just in the reverse. You have a need. So you go, before you try to invent something, go see if somebody has already invented something that will solve that need. A kind of a famous story was a guy by the name of Art Fry wanted a bookmarker that would stay in a book. And he didn't know where to find it, and he happened to go to a 3M seminar. And at the seminar, Dr. Spencer Silver was presenting a product that he had invented but had no idea how to use it. And the product was a low-tack, reusable adhesive. And the reason he couldn't find any way to use it is because who wants a glue that doesn't stick very well? I mean, you know, it seems to me that the fundamental requirement of a glue is that it sticks well. But he had one that didn't stick well. So Art Fry asked him if he could apply it to a piece of paper, and Dr. Silver said yes, and from that came Post-its, which for, well, almost 20 years, 15 years actually, until the patent ran out, was the highest percentage profit area that 3M had. And, you know, here was one, the product was already out there, but the guy who invented it had no idea how to use it. And Art Fry came up with the idea. So between the two of them, they made one.
Sorry to jump in on you, but you mentioned the patent. I just wanted to ask you about that. You said it ran out. Could that have been renewed?
Not really. A patent,
or are they
on... You issue a patent. The way it works is most people get a provisional patent. You've seen on many, many things a little stamp that says patent pending. They now call that a provisional patent. It's good for 1 year. And at the end of 1 year, you need to get a regular patent. And it depends upon what it is. Patents run either 14 years or 20 years. At the end of that period, it gravitates into the public domain. So 3M's patent was good for 20 years. And let's assume that Dr. Fry or Dr. Silver got a provisional patent for 1 year, and then they got a full-blown patent, product patent is what it would be called, and that's good for 20 years. So between the two of them, they had 21 years, and it took 5 years for them to figure out how to use it, during which time the clock was running. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of the 20 years, well, then anybody can use the product. In other words, they can take it and reverse engineer it. And actually, they don't even have to do that because the patent is out there. They go to the patent office. When the patent runs out, you copy the patent. You do exactly what it says in the case of the adhesive. And because the patent had to say what the products are, how you made the adhesive in very great detail, so then you do it. There's things that have never been patented just because they don't want it to run out. Coca-Cola, the syrup in Coca-Cola, has never been patented. There's never been a provisional patent or any other. It's a trade secret. And the reason they did it that way, they haven't gotten a patent, is because after 20 years, the patent runs out and people can go down and exactly match Coca-Cola. Now, they can't match the name because mm-hmm. that's a whole different kettle of fish. The name is not a patent. The name is mind just went blank. But a name for something, a book, a song, any of those can last
right.
up to 120 years.
Copyright, is that the word you're looking for?
Copyright, yeah, copyright. So you could not make Coca-Cola and sell it using the name Coca-Cola. But you could make Coca-Cola and sell it at some other name, and it would taste and be precisely the same.
Mm-hmm.
So you have there's one thing where the patent is 14 years and most of the others are 20 years. I'm getting pretty deep into the woods here, and so we probably ought not to go there. This is not a class on on patents. But that's the story of the patent, that after that period of time it ran out. Same thing is true of Velcro. Now, the name Velcro, nobody can use because that's a trademark. And they can use the exact way it's made, and they have. And the same thing is true of the sticky notes. You know, they now call them sticky notes, kind of generically, and the formula for the adhesive is precisely the same. Because that's at the patent office. You can get a copy of it. You just can't use it until it runs out. But the day after it runs out, it's in the public domain.
You know what's interesting about that, Professor, is that by the time the patent does run out, depending on how popular the product is, like you take Xerox, even though people might not have a Xerox machine in their office, they might have some other kind of copier, but the term has become generic. The company name, you know, they might say, hey, I need you to Xerox me a few copies of this, and
mm-hmm.
they're not even using the Xerox machine. You know what I mean?
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's being done. All kinds of products, that's true. Of champagne is one of them. A bottler cannot use the word champagne because that is copyrighted by an area in France. But they can use sparkling wine, and that's champagne.
Mm-hmm.
They just can't use the word champagne. So, and you can't use the word Post-its, but you can use sticky notes.
Interesting. Wow. Okay, everybody, I see your calls are coming in. Again, don't be shy. Just press 1 if you need to talk or want to talk. My special guest is Professor Joseph T. Geiger. We're talking about finding business opportunities. And Professor was giving us the definition of what is a business opportunity.
Yeah, there's one more way. We've got two now. There's three ways, as near as I know. And the third way is to find, I call it situational awareness. And you find a situation that a product or service that is now out there didn't work very well, and so you decide you're going to come up with a different one, or you're just out doing something and something crosses your mind. And all kinds of things that's happened to the guy who developed Velcro. It happened to him when he's from Switzerland and an outdoorsman, and he came down from the outdoors and had cockleburrs stuck to his pants. And he looked at them, and they had little hooks in them, and the little hooks is what stuck to the pants. And he thought, well, if I can figure out a way to generate those little hooks and put them on a piece of cloth or something else, I have a way of sticking two things together. As a matter of fact, Velcro comes from two French words, one velvet, which means a soft fabric, and the other crochet. And a crochet is a hook, is the French word for hook. So that's and now people cannot use the word Velcro, but they can use hook and cloth, and so they do to explain what they're doing. But it happens all the time. I put my way through college by just such an event. I was fishing in Colorado for trout, and using some very, very tiny flies that I had made myself and was doing real well. And a guy on the stream bank saw me and asked me what I was catching all the fish was. And I showed him, and he said, could I buy three of them for you for $10? Well, that doesn't sound like very much now, but this was in about 1958. And so I said, you bet. I was making 75 cents an hour as a busboy at the time. So $10 was a lot of money. Gasoline was selling for about 25 cents a gallon. So that was a lot of dollars for me. And so I decided, as I drove back to Denver, I was at University of Denver, and I decided, well, maybe there's a business opportunity here. And I made up 10 little boxes of these little tiny trout flies, put three flies in every box, and took them down to a very, very fancy sporting goods store and see if they would I could sell them there wholesale. And the guy said, well, really not. But then one of his salesmen got a customer to say, yeah, he would buy a box of those for $10. I wanted $6 for a box. And at the time, you could buy a single trout fly that was somewhat larger than these for 20 cents a piece retail. And I was asking $2 wholesale. And the guy said, well, that's crazy. But after the customer said, yeah, I'll do that. He did it, and all of them I could make. That one store would take and sell at $6 a box, and it took me about an hour to make three boxes of them. Today, that would be $155 an hour is what I was doing. And that's a whole lot better than 75 cents an hour. I mean, I'm not really good at math, but that one I can handle. So those are the three ways that you find a business opportunity. And if you'll do them, go out there, and particularly the last way, situational awareness. I don't think that I have made a challenge to hundreds of students and say, if you'll do this for a week, I'll bet you a dollar that you'll be able to find at least one. And I've never lost a dollar yet. Everybody has always been able to find something, and it not necessarily will it be a commercially profitable one, but it is an opportunity, and there's just thousands upon thousands of business opportunities out there. I had a student one time that in 16 weeks, actually about 14 weeks, she had pages of opportunities that she had discovered. Fill in a little notebook. And she said, I can't go a day without finding some. They're just everywhere. Now, and she, at the end of it, she had written a business plan and was on her way towards having a go at one of them, and she called me later and said, yeah, it worked. It worked.
Wow.
So there's just, you can't miss.
Dr. Geiger, there are a lot of ways to find businesses, business opportunities, as Professor Geiger is sharing with us. Professor, somebody wants to talk to you. You ready?
Okay, I am.
Okay, I'm going to call out the last four digits of your number. 5927. 5927, you're on the air with Professor Geiger. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
You're on the air. 5927, you're on the air with Professor Geiger. Maybe he pressed it by accident. Okay. So maybe that was an accident. Professor probably pressed one by mistake.
Okay.
So again, we're going through the book, Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 105 Business Principles. We're going chapter by chapter, principle by principle. Professor Geiger, in business, one of the things that from reading your book, it was clear that you enjoyed your work. But to be successful, it really helps to be happy doing what you love and doing what you're good at. Correct?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is really very important that you are, that you, otherwise, there's just no sense in going through life hating what you do. And a lot of people do. You know, I have had people, it's really common to hear people say, thank God it's Friday. Well, quite frankly, in my business lifetime, which spanned, there was probably over 50 years when I was actively in business. I'm 80 now. I started the first business when I was about 14. And so I've had a lot of years with it. And the vast majority of the time, this business of thank God it's Friday, for me, it was always thank God it's Monday. Because I liked what I was doing so much that I looked forward to it. And come weekends, I was very often a bit of a loss. And, you know, I could, I guess, find things to do, but they were not as exciting for me as the business. So if you can go through life and just find things that you really love to do, you'll have a much happier and more successful life. So if you just be happy and do what you love and what you're good at doing. And if you're not good at doing something, well, then find somebody who is good at doing it. And turn that job over to him and go back to the things you love.
A lot of times people, when they think about starting a business, one of the thoughts is, this looks like a good money-making venture. But they might not really have any interest. You took a deep breath on that.
No, I'm here.
Okay, yeah. Your thoughts on that? I mean, people look at say, I can make a lot of money doing such and such. If I just started a business, you know, they see the opportunity as a money-making venture, but might not necessarily have an interest in it. That eventually, even if you're making money, if you hate going to work every day, that takes away from the joy.
It really will. And I've seen people who had very, very profitable and successful businesses that learned, that just got to the point where they hated them so much that they didn't show up. And, of course, then the business sort of went downhill. And what I think first, it needs to be profitable, of course. But I think the businesses that people are most successful at are the ones that they love doing. They love to build the business. They think what they're doing is great, and it doesn't make it hardly any difference what it is. I mean, if you're the type of person who wants to see beautiful lawns and you love to do that sort of thing, well, for goodness sakes, go in the lawn care business because you'll love it and you'll do well at it. And you, maybe you could make a whole lot more money doing something else, and if you love that, fine. But if you don't, pretty soon you're going to get to the point where you hate going there and the business is going to go downhill. So do what you love and what you're good at doing, and success almost happens by itself. You just don't really have to try because you like it so much. you want to do a ever better job, and you'll just be successful at it.
You know, Professor, one of the points that you make in this section I thought is very important to bring out, and that would be a good time to do it, is you talk about how it's important to sell a product's benefits as opposed to just the low price of the product. Could you talk about that? I think that's important because I think oftentimes when people are promoting their business, you know, a lot of times people are, you know, price is, of course, important. You want to make your product affordable, and oftentimes people just promote the price, you know, as opposed to the benefits of the product that they're selling. Could you talk about that?
Sure. The price is, people are sold price. They don't necessarily want price. I mean, if somebody came to you and said, I've got a used 747 here, and we don't want any more. It costs a lot of money to store it. Hell, I'll sell it to you for $50,000, but you got to take it today. I wouldn't, you got to be kidding me. Or somebody comes and says, I've got 100,000 barrels of crude oil in a barge, and we got to offload it today, and we'll sell it to you for $20 a barrel. And today I think oil is selling for about $46. Wow, you can make a whole lot of money, but you got to take it now. Well, what are you going to do with it? I mean, you know, if you have a storage facility, fine. But if you have a storage facility, they already went to that person, and for one reason or another, they couldn't handle it. So people, first you try to buy, you try to sell to people who want it. Well, really, they have to have two things. They have to have the money to pay for it and the desire for it. So if you were selling fancy shotguns, you might find that I'm a prospect for you, but some New York socialite definitely isn't. And the socialite has lots of money, but they have no interest in it. And first you have to have the desire. And without the desire, it doesn't make any difference what it costs. You're not going to sell it if the people have no desire for it. And if they have a desire for it, depends upon how strong the desire for it is, the price can have absolutely nothing to do with it. People will spend lots and lots of money for things they have a desire for. A great example is jewelry. But what did diamonds sell for? Well, can you tell the difference between cut crystal, a CZ, and a real diamond? I can't.
No.
I mean, you know, if you look through it with a 10 power loop, you might see a imperfection, a little piece of black carbon in the diamond that would not be in the other two. But I can't tell the difference. On a woman's hand, you can't tell the difference. Even a jeweler can't tell the difference until you get really up close and very really examining it. And yet, the difference in price is astronomical. You know, a 2-carat cut glass is pennies. A 2-carat CZ might be $50-$80, and a 2-carat diamond, if it's a blue flawless, can be thousands. Now, what would get you to pay $2,000 for something that $10 in the same mount on a lady's hand is indistinguishable? I don't know, but I can tell you for sure people will do it all the time.
And art is the same way.
Yeah.
Art is the same way.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean,
definitely in the eye of the beholder.
Wine collectors. I mean, you have people that collect wine, and you know, they know the year, and you know, all of that, you know, and can spot a fraud.
That's right, and you and I couldn't. I mean, I drink wine every day, and I really like it, and it's a jug wine that my wife buys, and both of us have it, and we can afford whatever we want. But this is just great stuff, and frankly, it's better than many of the of the $10 or $20 a barrel or a bottle of wines that are out there, at least our palate. And so we are happy with it. But if we weren't, there are people who will spend $100 for a bottle of wine. I one time bought a very fancy champagne, and it was like $98 at at Costco. And the truth is, I couldn't tell the difference between that and a $20 bottle of champagne. I don't know. I would have admitted it at the time. Well, I did to myself, but I wouldn't admit it to anybody else. But that's the truth. And yet, they were selling that stuff. And if you went to a regular wine store, it would be under lock and key, and it was a whole lot more than $98 a bottle.
And again, we talked about art before. I mean, art is another one too, because see people paying millions of dollars for a painting that you look at it and say they're just throwing money away.
Putting me on. Yep, that's true. And you go to a modern art museum and you see stuff out up on the wall. And I think my 3.5-year-old granddaughter can do that, but she couldn't talk anybody into paying a couple of billion dollars for it. I wish you could. You probably can.
Well, it's abstract, right?
Yeah. So the requirement is that the principle, is the way I want to put it, is that the customer or buyer needs to have desire and dollars in that order. The desire is the most important part, because very often people will find the dollars if they have a high enough desire.
Mm-hmm.
And folks who think that they have to sell something at the lowest price don't understand marketing, because price has a lot to do with it if we're talking about bottled water. But if we're not talking about bottled water, price doesn't have a whole lot to do with it.
You know, what's interesting about that principle too, Professor, is that a lot of times people think that if something is priced low, that it's not, you know, that it's not good. I mean, oftentimes people think that, you know, if it's priced high, it must be worth it. I mean, oftentimes people just take the position that something that's, quote, cheap, end quote, is less than.
Yes. Not sometimes. Almost all the time.
Mm-hmm.
People will think that the higher priced item is therefore better. You'd have a very hard time convincing me that a $120,000 or $130,000 Mercedes is a whole lot better transportation than a Ford that sells for $20,000 or $30,000. The Ford probably will take a whole lot more abuse, and it may not be quite as quiet. But as far as getting from here to there, it will be extremely serviceable. When I was in the airplane business, I had a customer who had a very expensive Mercedes. And I asked him one time how he liked it. He went on and on how wonderful it was and how it was 10 years old or so, and it was just wonderful. I asked him, well, how often do you run it into the shop? Well, he said, I take it in every 3 months. And well, what does that cost? Well, it costs between $500 and $1,000. I said, you're kidding me. No. And that's one of the things that's really wonderful about it. Here it is, 10 years old, and it runs so well. And I said, hey, pal, at $1,000 or $4,000 a year, every 4 years you could take a Ford, this was quite a number of years ago, and junk it. I mean, burn it and buy a brand new one. And and do that every 4 years. Every 4 years you can have an absolutely brand new car for what it costs you just to maintain the one you have. This isn't counting the insurance for a $120-some thousand dollar car and the use of money. You've got 120 grand tied up into it, which the use of that money has some real value. You could have a brand new car every 3 to 4 years for the same price and take the old one and burn it. But he would hear nothing about
money.
That. Now, and he also said when he goes on long trips, he rents a car. So this was in California, and he said, if I have to drive from where I live here in the Bay Area down to San Diego or to Los Angeles, I rent a car to do that. And I couldn't believe that. Here he has this beautiful car. It drives terrifically. It's quiet. It's smooth as silk, and you don't drive it down there because you don't want to park it out on the street, and you rent a car. That's insane. But, you know, he was a lot richer than I was, so maybe I was the one who was insane, not him.
What you can do with money.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, we're moving on to principle number 11 now, everybody, and again, thank you for listening, tuning in, everyone. I see you up on the board. Principle 11 is, if you decide you hate it, don't close it. Sell it. Now, we're talking about business, okay? So if you're in a business and you decide that you got into it and it's not what you thought it was going to be, and it's profitable enough that you can sell it, don't close it. Sell it. Professor?
Yeah, and that it's not just a business. It's all kinds of things that very often you can sell them for very profitably. And a business, just because you don't like it, doesn't mean that somebody else doesn't think it's the berries. You know, and I know of lots of businesses out there that I wouldn't have a whole lot of interest in doing, but are very, very profitable, and one can sell them for a lot of money. I had an acquaintance when I was in the airplane business up in Bakersfield, California, who he got to the point where his business was really going downhill. Even though it was a profitable business, it was he had probably 50 or 60% of his market in Bakersfield. The other people up there were so small, there was no way they could buy him out. And he just was going to sell everything out and walk away. And I convinced him to try to find a market down in Los Angeles, which was, well, by air, about 35 minutes away, if that. And by driving, it was quite a ways. You know, it was 3 or 4 hours because you had the terrible traffic and you had a mountain range you had to go over, but it wasn't very far flying. And he eventually did. He first way I heard about it, he wanted to sell his airplane. Well, he ended up keeping his airplane, and eventually, after he sold it, he brought the new owner, who had a same type of business he had in Los Angeles, but was much bigger, to my place, and he bought an airplane. So you know, it was great for all of us. But
he bought an airplane from you.
Yeah, he bought an airplane from me. He learned to fly. We got him to fly, and then he bought an airplane and hired a pilot until he felt comfortable in doing it himself, and then was flying back and forth himself up to Bakersfield. So he just left in a car at Bakersfield and landed at the airport there, and 5 minutes later he was walking in the door. And he said it was great because he didn't have to tell anybody he was coming. He could just arrive. And at the end of the day, whether the end of the day was at 2 p.m. or 6 p.m, he drove back out to Bakersfield Airport, hopped in his airplane, and zipped back to Long Beach. So it was a great deal. It sold me an airplane. My friend up there got to keep his, and so it was a wonderful deal. And he hated the business, but the new owner loved it. And that's true over and over again.
And you had no idea that when your friend came to you and shared with you that he was going to sell or get out of his business, that you would end up selling an airplane. And that leads me to this next piece in your book here, which was business relationships sometimes offer numerous business opportunities.
Yeah, well, this one certainly did. The way I heard about it, he came down and said he wanted to sell his airplane. And I thought he enjoyed it. And when I asked him why, well, he said, well, he was selling the business. And after he sold the business, he probably couldn't afford the airplane. Because even small airplanes are hideously expensive. And so that's the way I heard about it. And my trying to get him to sell his business to somebody at the time really wasn't motivated with certainly not selling an airplane, because it never occurred to me to do that other than kind of an idle conversation when he first said that, well, he didn't think he'd sell his business to somebody in L.A. just because the horrid drive up there to Bakersfield. And I said, well, is it a horrid drive for you? He said, well, of course not. I mean, it's a 30-minute flight. Take off, set the autopilot, and enjoy the scenery. And then 25 minutes later, prepared to land. So it but then he got the guy after the man bought the business. Then he realized what a tough trip it was. Up until that time, my acquaintance in Bakersfield was flying him back and forth. And then when he tried to drive it, he thought, oh, my God, this has some downsides to it. So he ended up buying an airplane.
Wow. Everybody, I hope you're enjoying this conversation as much as I am. My special guest is Professor Joseph T. Geiger. We're discussing his book, Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 105 Business Principles. We're going to tell you how you can get the book in a little bit, but I want to get into this next, we're moving from Chapter 2 into Chapter 3, and we won't be able to cover all of Chapter 3 today, but we can definitely whet your appetite for what's coming up. This chapter is, I don't know if I would necessarily say it's the most important chapter in the book, but it's up there, okay? We're going to be talking about the business plan. Oftentimes when entrepreneurs decide that they want to start a business, they envision the business. But they don't envision themselves sitting down writing the business plan. But this is of utmost importance. It cannot be overstated. You need a business plan. Professor, can you talk about the business plan?
Yeah, the business plan is really, it's two parts. And the part one is it's a story of how you envision the business to be formed, what the what you need to do, in other words, the policies you need to have for it, the people that you're going to need to have run it. Maybe the people are just you, and maybe it's you and one other, maybe it's you and 100 others. But you need to do that. You need to go through the things that you're going to do to make the business run. And this is a story. This is a narrative. It doesn't have anything to do with money. That comes a little later. And once you have done that, once you have come up with the business plan, the road miles that you're going to do, how you're going to do it, and that once you come up with that, then the second part is to come up with how you will finance the business plan. Well, what you need to know is how much money you're going to need. How do you find that out? Well, you do a cash flow forecast. So first you do your narrative, and then from that you do a cash flow forecast. And a cash flow forecast is essentially what are you going to sell and what is it going to cost you to sell it? Or and maybe you're going to have to make it in order to sell it. But all of those things are vitally important to how you're going to do your business plan. And if you don't have that down absolutely pat, you got a big problem on your hands. Because you will not succeed. The truth is that of the business plans that start, the businesses that start every year, and therefore well, between 2007 and 2015, there was right at 600,000 businesses formed every year. And
wow.
Half of those died in the first year. And it's really a shame that that many died. And the reason they died is because there was really no plan. They ran out of money, and they had not gone through it. So the purpose of the business plan is to go through what you're going to be doing to make your business run step by step in very great detail, and it's a month by month. So in other words, you should do a three-year business plan. The first year is done monthly. Second and third years are done quarterly, and you should know in as fine a detail as you possibly can how you're going to run this business. And if you don't do that, you're frankly going to end up in big trouble. Everybody who doesn't do it ends up in big trouble. I mean, it's like 100%. You just are, that's going to happen. And so you really, really, you need to do a business plan. In the book that I wrote, the business plan shows up. There's a whole chapter on it. And it's one of the major chapters, and it goes through step by step how to do it. When I first started, I was like everybody else. I didn't do that. The first real business, it actually was a third or fourth business I started that was going to take some serious money. I wrote out kind of a narrative and put some numbers to it, but it was pretty simple. And although I made it by the skin of my teeth, and I made it in part because somebody came to my rescue when I was getting ready to go out of business. It was selling airplanes. I had a bunch of airplanes sold, but I didn't have the money to buy them in order to deliver them. A guy came to my aid, and Jim Douglas, and bailed me out. Actually, he was a banker, and he saved my bacon. And it was sometime after that, as I grew the business, that I got myself in trouble again. And I finally realized that the second time in that one business, probably about 6 or 7 years after I started it, that I better come up with a way of making decisions that worked and having a plan that I could follow. And so I wrote it. At the time, I had no book to go from. I had no friends to go to. I just had to kind of discover it on my own. And so I came up with to write it out, and then I came up with a cash flow forecast, which I now, after, 25 years or so of refining it, I have it available on my website, and I charge a great big $15 to download it and send it to people. And it's 30 or 26 pages. It sounds like a lot, but it's a simple answer to questions, and it just forces you to go through your business plan in excruciating detail. And what I tell people, they say, well, I've never done this. This is too hard. Well, you also have never run the business. And that's going to be a whole lot harder than doing the business plan. And it's a whole lot more expensive. With the business plan, you're not spending your own money, or at least not very much of it. Once you start the business, you're going to start spending your own money. And it's a very poor time to be planning things when you're watching your business, your bank account go down every day. So be sure to do a business plan. Let me add one more thing about the cash flow forecast. What it tells you is how much money you're going to need and when you're going to need it on a month-by-month basis. And if your luck is like mine, you will always underestimate the amount of money you need. It always costs more and takes longer. At least that's been my experience. But if you don't have that, the chances are very, very high that you're going to join the 50% of new business owners whose business goes out bankrupt in the first 12 months.
And everybody, the business plan is, I want to take another call, Professor, somebody else wants to talk to you, but the business plan is going to be more than just one or two pages. Okay?
Oh, boy.
It's not going to be
yeah,
one,
the,
two
the
or
ones
three
that my students do are usually 35 to 50 pages.
Wow, and it's worth it. It's
yeah.
worth it.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely worth it. Okay,
yep.
F caller, I'm getting ready to come to you. The last four digits, 4725. 4725, you're on the air with Professor Joseph T. Geiger. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Thanks for having the show again, Brother Jawanza.
Thank you.
I got the notification late. I wish I got a chance to listen to the whole thing, but I'll go in the archives. But I had a quick question.
That's who am I speaking with?
My name's Christian.
Oh, hey,
okay,
how you doing?
Christian, go.
Huh?
Go with your question.
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. So I was wondering, like, if you have a business plan, when do you decide to, like, jump for it? Because sometimes I'm having a bit of trouble getting over that fear. I have everything planned out, but it's just, like, this little fear that's, just, like, I have backup money and all that. How do you get over that fear?
I don't know that you do. I mean, at some point you say you're either fish or cut bait. You either do it or you don't do it. And you go through your business plan until you're satisfied that you think you can do it, that it looks like you have the money, you know how much you're going to need and when you're going to need it, and you make sure that you have that. You try to have all of the questions that you could answer put to bed. And there's still going to be more. There is no such thing. All you can do is cut down on your odds of not making it. Now, I've started 11 businesses, and every one of them I've made. However, I got to tell you that there have been some that have been squeakers, and every time I don't plan really, really well, I get myself into trouble, and the plan will help you. So if you get my book and go through the plan that it talks about there. So what is the narrative? Make sure you wrote that, and then make sure that you have a really, really good cash flow forecast. Mine's a good one. There are others on the internet. My book gives you the websites that at least the ones I've tried and are comfortable to think that they're going to help you out. And once you've gone through all of that, you then decide, am I up to the taking the chance? And there are no guarantees, but nobody had a guarantee.
Could you talk about, have Christian on the line, SCORE for a moment, because that's an organization, Professor, that I know that you like.
I do.
You have people out there. What type of business is it, Christian?
Are you talking to me? Say
what type of what type of business is it?
It's a trucking business.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, here another thing. When I said you got to write a narrative, go to SCORE, SCORE dot Richmond dot org, SCORE dot Richmond dot org, and.
Okay.
And they have there, or maybe it's richmond.score.org, it's one of the two, and they have a great business plan there that is it's either 29 or 34 pages. It changes from time to time. And it's really neat because it assumes you don't know anything. So one of the things they'll talk to you about is you need to write an executive summary. Well, what the heck's an executive summary? Most places they assume you know. Well, the SCORE plan assumes you don't know, so it tells you. And it goes through all the other stuff you have to go through. I would suggest you go there, you look at that. I like my cash flow forecast better than theirs because I think mine forces you to go through your the steps month by month in greater detail. And I've had a lot of people say, well, you don't need that much detail. Well, maybe you don't, but all the business that I started, my money was at risk. And I wanted all the darn detail I could get, because if it didn't make, I was the one who was going to be the big loser. So,
okay.
But try SCORE, and SCORE stands for Senior Core of Business Executives, or something like that. Senior Core of Retired Executives, and and then you can find somebody there who will go over it with you. They don't charge; it's all free. The only problem I have with them is very often you'll have somebody who has great experience, but not necessarily in your kind of business. So you might find somebody who is a retired executive from General Motors. Well,
okay.
That guy has no concept of what you're doing. I mean, when you tell him it's going to cost $5,000 to do something, and that's a lot of money to you, would be to me, to them, it's not even a rounding error. So
yeah.
That's the only problem. I do some consulting. I do charge for it, and if you want to get into that, you can call me, or my email address is theroadtothetop.com.
Theroadtothetop.com. Okay.
Theroadtothetop.com.
So,
and
okay.
Send me an email, and if you want your phone number, and I can get back to you.
And
okay.
You can also get the book from the same email,
yeah.
The Road to the Top, www, the Road to the Top, because you talk about erasing the fear. I'm telling you, Christian, this is a good book. I'm telling you, there's 105 business principles, and if you're interested in getting the book, Professor Geiger is going to come back on next month, and you will have had the book, and you would have read up through the business plan, and probably by that time you could have easily finished the book. You can increase your odds by having a book with 105 business principles, and of course, Professor will tell you that during the course of starting your own business, you'll probably come up with your own principles, a few of your own, but 105 you don't have to worry about, because he's already gone through them, and these are things that will invariably come up in business. And so, Professor, can you tell them how they can get the book?
Yeah, theroadtothetop.com. You go to that website, and it's 105 business principles. And the difference between my principles and others is they're actionable. In other words, one of the reasons I wrote it is because the stuff I was teaching in college, the books that I was using, I thought were just they're great philosophy, but I kept saying, well, how do you do it? And a good example is if you want a roadside sign, the textbooks would blather on for pages, and when you got through it, you'd say to yourself, how do you do that? And you think, I have no idea. Well, mine for roadside signs is a rule of seven. You're allowed to have one picture and seven words. And if you can keep a roadside sign to one picture and seven words, people will read it. And if it's a lot more words than that, they won't read it. Next time you're driving down a highway, check me out. You'll find I'm telling you the truth. So my 105 principles, each one of them is actionable. You can actually do it. And that's the difference between being successful and not being successful.
Christian, thank you so much for your call. You'll be tuning in next month, I hope.
Yes, I will. I definitely will. Thank you, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, thank you. Professor, thank you. Again, this has been an awesome hour, man. It went by. The
yeah.
hour went by so fast.
Always do.
Always. Again, I encourage everybody to get the book, Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 105 Business Principles. Professor Geiger is a regular on the show. He comes on monthly, if not sooner. And I guarantee you, this book, if you're an entrepreneur and you're really serious about business, I mean, you're really serious about it. In business, you want to, again, stack the odds in your favor. You want to increase the chances that you will be successful. And by listening to somebody who's got over 50 years experiences, started over 10 businesses, has sold planes, boats, I mean, you name it, professor, an author, I mean, you would be wise to listen to the information that Professor Geiger is sharing with us. So, again, in addition to listening to the broadcast, I would suggest that you get the book. That way you can have it handy, and you can read it, and you can refer it to other people that you know that are entrepreneurs as well. We're on the business plan, everybody. We just set the table, okay? Next month we're going to be eating, all right? So make sure that you're back with us next month. Every third Tuesday of the month, Professor is my special guest, okay? So make sure that you mark it on your calendar, and in between now and then, get the book and the business and the cash flow forecast, because you're definitely going to need that. Any parting words for our listeners today, Professor?
No, not at all. I'll be looking for you next month, and we can go some more. If you get the book, you'll have problems or questions. And if you don't get the book and you have questions, do call.
Professor, let's do it. Can we do it in 2 weeks? A month?
Sure.
I'm hungry, man. I want some more. I don't want to wait a month. Okay, we'll do it, everybody. In 2 weeks, Professor's going to be back, okay? Mark your calendar, all right? So, again, thank you, everybody, for your time. Professor, I really appreciate you. Again, this book is such an offering that a lot of people can benefit from, and they'd be wise to take advantage of the opportunity to have a book with 105 principles that you've already outlined, so they don't have to make those errors that you made along the way. So thank you so much.
Thank you, sir. Have a good night.
All right. Everybody, that is Professor Joseph T. Geiger, again, author of the book Entrepreneurial Success, The Road to the Top, 105 Business Principles. Again, he's a regular on the show, comes on once a month, but he'll be back in 2 weeks. Okay, so make sure that if you're serious, that you tune in 2 weeks from now. And I guarantee you, if you're serious about business, you'll be glad that you did. And refer this show. If you know of other people that are entrepreneurs, then definitely this is a show that people can really, really benefit from, because you need all the help you can get. If you're starting your own business, you need all of the help you can get. You need somebody there to hold your hand, walk you through, and when you have somebody, again, with 50 years experience, you can't help but benefit from their knowledge. Make sure that you tune in. I'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
See you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Everybody, again, thank you so much for your time. I truly appreciate you. Again, I always say you could be doing something else, but instead of doing something else, you're here with me. And so, let me let you know, tomorrow, you definitely want to tune into the show tomorrow. My special guest is going to be Orwa Hehi Meduran Comet. He's Paramount King of the D.C. region of the Osiriset Society, and we're going to be talking about evidence-based spirituality. Evidence-based spirituality. That's going to be tomorrow, Wednesday, from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Again, Orwa Hehi Meduran Comet. We've done awesome shows. They're all in the archives. I mean, you can scroll down the archives, and wherever you see his name, all you have to do is just click, and I guarantee you, you'll be in for a wealth of information that can help you spiritually grow, all right? But he's going to be my guest tomorrow. We're going to be talking about evidence-based spirituality, so make sure that you're with us for that, okay? My name is Juwanza. Again, I do appreciate your time. Who am I? I'm the one who, in giving, receives more. Who are you? That's it. Thank you.